Welcome to Not Enough Champagne, a podcast that believes that if saving orangutans is political, then nothing is political. My name's Corey Hazelhurst, and my tree-hugging partner of propaganda is Steve Haynes.
Hey, Corey.
Now, the environment is something we haven't really covered on the podcast this year. Generally, we mention it in association with Michael Gove, plastic straws, and various jokes. But it's been brought to the forefront over the last year. Not just the UN report, which we're hoping to talk about at some point, but also a couple of recent news events. So one of them is that George Monbiot wrote a column saying that David Attenborough had betrayed the natural world. So typically even-handed headline from The Guardian there. And there's also Iceland's Christmas advert has been banned for saying things.
Saying things like, maybe we shouldn't destroy the rainforests.
Because if you're going to make people cry, it should only be out of nostalgia for a Christmas that never really existed, rather than because of actual events. As well as talking about those things, we're going to basically try and answer the question is, what is the best way to campaign for the environment? Stick with us to find out what that is. Now you did what I did actually at the start with this George Monbiot article, because the article is headlined, David Attenborough has betrayed the living world he loves. And that headline, it's kind of clickbait, but it's reverse clickbait, because
It makes me not want to read it, because it reads like it's going to be a stereotypical George Monbiot piece, which I have no interest in reading.
Well, that's a bit harsh. I like George Monbiot. I think he's always worth reading, but it makes it sound like it's going to be a ranty George Monbiot piece, which maybe is not worth reading. If you read it, though, it's much more interesting and much more nuanced than the headline.
Yeah, I think the sub-editors who wrote that that headline have done Monbiot a big disservice there and massively screwed over the point of his piece.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, essentially, what Monbiot says is that David Attenborough, with his wildlife documentaries, creates an idealised view of wildlife and the natural world. And then the second criticism is that Attenborough doesn't use the platform that he's got effectively to campaign on environmental issues.
Yeah, and it is a very interesting article, and you know, I do feel like Monbiot actually has some good and valid points there. I mean, the way he expresses some of them is quite interesting, in that he basically says that in terms of, you know, messaging that's in terms of dealing damage to the environment, the BBC has had a worse impact on Britain than ExxonMobil has, because the BBC have refused to actually depict the truth and the reality of the environmental situation. And to be honest, I find it difficult to argue against his point there. Maybe it's a bit hyperbolic to say that ExxonMobil has done less damage than the BBC to the environment. His general point that the BBC seems to be somewhat reticent at showing the environment as it currently is, rather than just as we would like to think it is, I think is a fair critique. I mean, he does go in and talk about his experiences from when he was working for the BBC, working with producers of wildlife documentaries, and they tried to get a show which basically did depict the environment as it was, rather than just the idealised depictions, and was basically told to shove off. Indeed, I think the quote is, he was basically told, I've spent 3 or 4 years trying to get this wildlife crap off of my net, off of the channel, why would I want to commission this? And that seems to be a theme time and time again, according to Monbiot, in the BBC's approach to the environmental programming. Unless, of course, your name is David Attenborough. And with Attenborough, obviously, anything that he touches becomes, you know, must-see TV. An awful lot of the population, they become like family viewing. Blue Planet, Planet Earth, all of these things are, you know, well-known TV shows watched by millions on millions of people. So, all in all, you know, Attenborough does have a very powerful platform which he could use to push for a more realistic depiction of of the environment. And the reason Monbiot has written this article is because Attenborough came out and basically said the latest program that he's doing is going to be stepping back from all of the kind of alarmist kind of depictions of environmentalism, because he doesn't think people need it, and he thinks that's actually going to hurt the environmental cause in the long run. Which, again, from Attenborough's point, I can kind of see. But if Attenborough's not prepared to make that case for you know, a program depicting the world as it is, in the some instances very alarming situations that do exist, then no one is going to do it, because nobody else has got that power to kind of force those sorts of TV shows through.
Now, in things like Planet Earth and in things like Blue Planet and Blue Planet 2, the shows do show the impact of climate change. It shows it on polar bears having to travel longer distances. It shows it on light pollution with the heartbreaking thing. Did you see the one with the light pollution, the turtles, and they head towards the lights and the cars, and oof, it's bad. And it's definitely the Blue Planet episodes about the huge amount of plastic in the oceans have had a massive impact, I think, on raising those kind of environmental issues. And the fact that you're seeing lots of campaigns trying to say about plastic high streets, you've got lots of people trying to cut down plastic use, you've got supermarkets having this thing comes with fewer plastic. That's a direct result of Attenborough's programming. So where I think that Monbiot is being a little bit polemical is by somehow he suggests that Attenborough doesn't touch it at all, which is not true, in that he does.
No, he does address it in a number of instances, absolutely. But I think Monbiot's point is, look at the impact David Attenborough had with the plastic campaign, which was almost, or with the effect on plastics, which was almost an incidental effect of the TV show. Now imagine what he could do if he set out to actually try and do something and actually turned one of his TV series into something that was meant to, you know, inspire campaigning in some form or another. Like, and I think that's where Monbiot is kind of getting at with his critique, is that Attenborough arguably has a moral responsibility to use his power for good. And he is failing to do so, and is in fact not just failing to do so, he is taking a step further back and saying, oh, all of this stuff, you know, I think it's actually counterproductive, which, you know, based on his own, the effect that his shows have had already, I don't think it is counterproductive. I think that like David Attenborough, according to polling, is quite literally the most trusted man in Great Britain. Like something like 86% of people would trust David Attenborough. So if he comes out and says something, people are much more likely to respond to it. And I think that's what's kind of getting stuck in Monbiot's craw, is as someone who is supposed to be a spokesperson for environmental issues, which is what a lot of people will view David Attenborough as, and he certainly positions himself as that at various points, he is not utilising his power fully for the benefit of the environment. And I think it is a fair critique from Monbiot's point on Attenborough there.
I think there are two things. One of them, I think, shows that I agree with that critique, and one of them, I think, is showing that I think that's a little bit overblown. In terms of where I differ, it's actually one of the reasons the Blue Planet episode on plastic use made such an impact is essentially because there was no strident tone taken. There was no browbeating involved. And I think it's a classic example of how you catch more wasps with honey than with vinegar. Because, as you've said, Blue Planet, Planet Earth, Attenborough's TV shows, family viewing, mass audience, 10 million people watched it, had a massive, massive impact on plastic use. Now, would, say, a documentary by George Monbiot or whoever, or even David Attenborough being really, really strident and angry about it, would that have had the same audience? Would it have had the same impact? Or would you instead, what probably would have happened is, you have an audience of 1 or 2 million people, 3/4 of whom already agreed with what you said anyway.
So I would agree that if it were George Monbiot doing the documentary, absolutely, you'd get a very small number of people comparatively watching it, and they probably already would agree with George Monbiot. I think if it's David Attenborough, and it's him. I don't necessarily, like, it's David Attenborough. It would never be an angry kind of strident thing. But it could be, it could still go out of its way to show the impact on the environment. Like, one of Monbiot's points in the article is that speaking to the wildlife, I don't know, documentary makers, for lack of a better term, who work on Blue Planet, who work on planet Earth, they are finding it increasingly more difficult to actually be able to create the shots that are pristine, where you can see things in their natural, quote-unquote, environment, because that natural environment has been destroyed for the most part. There are no Edens left on Earth, which man has not touched. And as a result of that, I almost feel like that Attenborough is, by not kind of showing nature in its current state and showing it in an idealized state because it's nicer for us to look at, I think that's, it undermines his integrity, and it undermines the kind of like the truth behind the documentaries themselves.
I find that confusing because a lot of the bits of Planet Earth was very purposefully showing the impact that man was having on the environment. And it was, so that this is where I kind of disagree with what Monbiot's saying. I do think that he's showing the impact that man is having. Whether that is with the raising temperature of the ice caps, whether that is with the light pollution, whether that is with the fact that there's a whole episode of Planet Earth for the first time, which is about wildlife in towns, and you've got tigers that rampage through gardens, you've got monkeys that are stealing fruit from markets and surviving that way. So in that sense, I think Attenborough is showing that. What he's not doing, and this comes to the second part of the critique, I think, is, and this is where I think Monbiot's got more of a point, is that Attenborough doesn't really address the causes of that environmental impact. He doesn't talk about the structural factors at play. Mm-hmm. And again, you could say that's not what he's trying to do. He's trying to show wildlife. He's not being angry and strident. I mean, everyone's tried to impersonate David Attenborough at least once in their life. You can't do an angry David Attenborough impersonation. It's impossible.
You could do a very disappointed David Attenborough impersonation, and that would be very effective.
Indeed. And I think maybe one of the more interesting bits of the Monbiot article, he talks about the environmental series that Attenborough did about 10, 12 years ago called The Truth About Climate Change, in which Monbiot says the only mention of fossil fuel companies was as part of the solution in terms of trying to put carbon dioxide back underground, and also says that the only people who were mentioned as being responsible for climate change were the Chinese, and the fact that Chinese carbon emissions are causing global warming, which led to a bit of fatalism where Monbiot is being told, well, there's nothing we can do because of Chinese carbon emissions, which I've heard as well, and ignores the fact that a lot of those carbon emissions are because the Chinese are making goods that we buy. And so I suppose what Monbiot says is that if Attenborough's environmentalism has a coherent theme, it is shifting the blame from powerful forces onto either society in general or the poor and weak. And I think, certainly with plastic use, there is an element of that, isn't there?
Yeah, I mean, I think there's evidence of that across most of the kind of like environmental debate. As a case in point, whenever you talk about what can we do to combat climate change and reduce our CO2 consumption, you end up with like tips and tricks of, oh yeah, make sure your TV's not left on standby, make sure all the lights are turned off, turn down the heating on your washing machine so that everything's a bit more environmentally friendly. All of things which are good to do, but the reality is, according to a study which was done, I think, last year in 2017, 71% of the world's CO2 emissions come from 100 companies. 71%. Over two-thirds. That means, in the grand scheme of things, us making those small tweaks to our lifestyles actually aren't going to make a blind bit of difference to it. What we need to see is regulations are put on those companies so that they are forced to decrease their CO2 emissions in some form. Because here's the thing, we can actually still fly off to holiday once a year. We can still drive our cars. We can still do an awful lot of things that we do today that release CO2 and you know, affect directly our lives if those companies actually get off their asses and decrease their emissions. And I think Monbiot is correct that overall there is this kind of like this movement to put it onto the individual, that it's up to the individual to save the planet. It's up to the individual to decrease their carbon footprint, rather than talking about the actual main culprits of all of this stuff. Yes, ultimately, there are things we can do to help, and especially when it comes to purchasing products which are, you know, made by certain companies or use certain ingredients and things like that, and more on that momentarily. Mm-hmm. You know, there are things that we can and probably should do. Either encourage those companies to take action or punish them for not taking action, because ultimately what they respond to is their profit margins.
Well, indeed. I mean, a lot of the... We did a few podcasts last year on the theme of personal responsibility and trying to talk about personal responsibility in terms of either losing weight or environmental impact, that kind of thing. And the theme was of it was that you can't just talk about the individual. If we were to just talk about what we can do individually, it's the equivalent of saying... in terms of the world impact on climate change, it's the equivalent of saying that you can lose weight by having a medium doner meat and chips rather than a large doner meat and chips, or add salad with your kebab. It's not going to help really at all, because as you say, you've got those companies with the big emissions. What you need instead is either nudging or, let's be honest, shoving. You need that regulation, and you need that kind of that political heft. And without that, without that, it's meaningless. And that is that's the element that's missing. And how you get that, I'm not really sure.
And I think this is kind of where actually the heart of Monbiot's critique of Attenborough is that Attenborough is not being political with his message, because the minute Attenborough turns around and says, we need to do something about this and here is a solution, it moves from the world of entertainment and documentary making into the world of politics. And we have seen a very good example of this actually in the past week or so with the Iceland advert, which has been banned for being too political.
So Iceland, the supermarket, not the country, they, as their Christmas advert, were going to have a video which originally comes from Greenpeace. And the idea is that there is a... you've probably all seen it by now because there are millions of views, but there's an orangutan in a small child's room, and the orangutan somehow persuades the small child that the reason the orangutan is in the child's bedroom is because their habitat has been destroyed. Because of palm oil, so the orangutan has to be in the house. I'm not sure how the orangutan communicates this to the child.
Seems to be telepathically, as far as I can tell.
In the advert, it's done through the medium of song, which...
Poem.
Yeah, more than indeed. I feel there's a bit of a missed opportunity here, because it's not just orangutans' habitats which are being destroyed. There's also elephants' habitats which are being destroyed. And the fact that they didn't have the elephant in the room... I'm sorry, Steve. It's a missed opportunity in many, many ways.
Two things. One, elephants aren't as cute as orangutans.
I don't know. What about Dumbo? If Dumbo had been the elephant in the room... So this advert is basically playing on the fact that Iceland has stopped palm oil from being used in its products because it's environmentally devastating. And Clearcast, who are the people who vet ads before they go public, have said that this advert about the orangutan and the palm oil and the environmentalism isn't allowed to be played at Christmas because it's too political.
Which is insane. Because as far as I can see, if this had turned around and said, you know, we at Iceland do not believe in genetically modified foods. We do not use any genetically modified foods in any of our products. No one would have cared. It would have been fine. If they turned around and said, we at Iceland believe wholeheartedly in the power of organic foods to make people's life better, no one would have batted an eyelid at it. But it's just for some reason, as soon as you start talking about deforestation, it becomes, that's political, we can't see that, we can't show that at all. And it's no different than saying, you know, we don't use this product.
It's strangely squeamish, isn't it? It's weird, because it's almost, well, we can't talk about that because that's bad, and we don't want to have the bad news on at Christmas. We want the heartwarming John Lewis advert that talks about families and loss and separation.
An old man on the moon, or whatever.
And the man on the moon was, let's face it, a quite inherently political act. That was part of a Cold War.
But yeah, I don't know whether it's just because they've reworked the Greenpeace ad that this is the reason. And I think you suggested before we kind of started recording that maybe if they'd just done a shot-for-shot remake of it, you know, with a slightly different orangutan...
An elephant, Steve. It has to be an elephant.
A slightly different cute animal of some description. That it would have been allowed. But if that's the case, then it's either going to be a rule which is not going to be very fairly implemented, and it's going to be very hit and miss as to what can or cannot be allowed, or it's going to be very strictly implemented if this is going forth as a... as an indicator of what is and isn't allowed, because ultimately everything is political in some form. As I said, like saying you disapprove of GM crops or genetically modified crops or something like that is a political act. Is it political for let's say we had a trade deal with the US and Sainsbury's turned around and said, we don't sell chlorinated chicken. Is that political? Would that be allowed? Because
Have you brought Brexit into this, Steve?
Because it's a good example. But you know what I mean, though.
I know what you mean. It's a good point.
What is the measure, the stick at which you measure this? Is it a case of no politics is allowed, in which case you shouldn't be making any statements about anything, or is there an acceptable level of politics, and at what level? How do you measure that?
Well, and to go back to heartwarming Christmas adverts, like loneliness is a pressing political issue because it impacts on mental health, which is a massive political issue. The government is taking it seriously. We've just had our first minister for suicide prevention appointed. Yeah. So, that in terms of bringing the family together at Christmas and the nuclear family, you could almost say is political as well. So it feels to me like it's basically as long as you don't frighten the horses, as long as you don't have to have these awkward conversations. And I suppose there's always a bit of an element of that with environmentalists and environmentalism, is that they're kind of asking too many awkward bloody questions about... what you eat and what you buy and the implications of that has. And I don't think people like it very much. I mean, maybe something we could... For instance, so Deborah Ross in the Times a week or two ago talked about the William Sitwell farrago, in which British Twitter was consumed for a few days because the editor of a supermarket PR magazine insulted a vegan in an email. But I suppose the point that Deborah Ross was making in that was essentially vegans are more moral than I am, and I accept that and I understand that because they're very consciously aware of the way that milk is produced in farms. They're very aware of the fact that a lot of our meat industry is terrible and the conditions that animals in are terrible. It's just that most people prefer to look the other way, and the advert is trying to get you not to look the other way, and the advertisers have almost done their work for them.
Yeah, the advert is very effective. The advert does its job very, very well. Palm oil is something I'm vaguely aware of, as a thing that is bad. But I'll be honest and say I've never really thought about it. I'm thinking about it now. Weirdly, you know, the Clearcast have potentially amplified the reach of this advert more. I mean, when we checked earlier today, because we were curious, it had something like 1.2 million views in a day.
Yes. So, and on Twitter, there's someone else who shared it on Twitter saying this advert's been bad, we need to reach out, and it's got 4.8 million views on Twitter.
Yeah. And the reality is that this is also going to go global, because you know damn well Greenpeace are going to be putting this out through their social channels. You know that this will be end up being picked up on social media in the US as well. So... weirdly, from a kind of the perspective of the message behind the advert about, you know, making it more, making people aware of the impact of deforestation that's coming from purchasing palm oil products, you know, weirdly, counterproductively, it's maybe better that it's been banned than not, because now it's got an international audience. Because it can now be shared on Facebook with clickbaity titles of this advert was banned by the British government.
They'll get the word betrayal in there. Every good clickbaity headline now apparently has to have betrayal in it.
Betraying the environment.
On that note, I'm sure we'll be speaking about some sort of betrayal next week as well.
Almost certainly.
So, in the meantime, we have a website, notanothershampagne.com. We have a Facebook page, which is facebook.com/notenoughchampagne, and our Twitter handle is @nochampagnepod. James Cram is not a traitor, he's a straight up guy. He'll design our logo. You can follow him on Twitter @JamesCram. And Dave Depper is responsible for our slogan, Plucky Good Times. My Twitter handle is @PaperbackWriter.
Mine is @AcousticRadical.
Happy plotting.